Lord's Day morning, we began a series that I call Comfort from Psalms. I had been asked if I would deal with some of the Psalms as they deal with comfort during struggles and trials and discouragements. We're going to have a short series, but we're going to look at several Psalms, and we may even take some of the Psalms and combine them together to look at the points that are made in the Psalms. But we began on the note in our last study that there are times that we as God's people, we hurt or we're discouraged. Or maybe we feel lonely, or our faith gets weak. And there are times that we may even just almost throw up our hands and quit because we're so discouraged. And we don't know what to do. The psalmist was often that way. Not always the same psalmist, but they would be discouraged. And that's the point of the psalms that we're going to consider. The first psalm that we think about, or at least I think about when I think about that, was Psalm 55. And that was our study last week. And we looked at frustration turns to trust. I immediately think, when I think about discouragement, of the psalm that talks about that I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and I'd be at rest. We saw in that a frustrated heart. And then the psalmist turned to talk about a wicked friend. And then he turned and he talked about his resolve was in God. The point I wanted us to see from that psalm is that he starts the psalm on the note that he thought about flying away. I'd just like to get away from all of this frustration. But that wasn't the answer. He found that the answer was flying to God was much better. In verse 22, he cast your burden on the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never permit the righteous to be moved. The next psalm that I immediately think about is Psalm 77. It is a psalm that talks about the principle that it seems that God has forgotten his people. Just a few months ago, we looked at this psalm. But it is so fitting to the thing that we're trying to accomplish in this series, we need to revisit that, I think, and it'd be beneficial to revisit, and there may be some familiarity to you. Hopefully it is. But let's go back and revisit this Psalm 77, because it fits and plugs in to what we're trying to accomplish in the comfort that we get from the Psalms when we are discouraged, when we feel lonely, when we feel like, maybe I ought to just sort of throw up my hands. And we see much of the same kind of thing in this Psalm of a shift that takes place seemingly from or during the night, as a psalmist contemplates a problem and a tragedy. Here we have in Psalm 77 some national tragedy of some sort. Scroggie says it is humiliation from the Chaldean oppression. And that would seem fitting because the previous psalm seems to talk about the Assyrian aggression. And this psalm then focuses seemingly on the Chaldean oppression. There is some national tragedy. There is something that's happened to the nation that causes him to think about something that happened to the nation once before. And so we argue for the fact that it is a national tragedy of some sort. And it is the Babylonian captivity. Kirkpatrick said that when the psalmist wrote, the blow has fallen. Israel is in exile. It is clearly no mere private and personal sorrow which overwhelms his spirit, but the apparent rejection of Israel by God. But in light of Israel's past history, he is taught to believe that this rejection cannot be permanent. And that is a great summary of the psalm. At the moment the psalm opens, the hammer has already fallen upon Judah. It has already fallen upon Israel. They are in captivity. They are in exile. And now what's going to happen? That is the point, indeed, of the psalm. Jensen said it's a time of deep trouble. Yours may not be a national tragedy, but it could be something on the national scene where there is a national tragedy that has you discouraged. What's going to happen next? It may be something happening within the church. It may happen within your own life where there is deep trouble, as Jensen describes here in this psalm. The picture in this psalm is a picture of one who is wrestling with grief and with doubts. He begins to wonder, has God forgotten his people? He raises six questions about that, beginning at verse 7 and 8 and then 9. There are six questions that basically say, has God forgotten his people? Has God turned his back upon us? I cry out to God, but I don't feel any different now that I've cried out unto God. Has God just forgotten us? Is his mercy gone? Does God not care about us anymore? He has sleepless nights, verse 4. And much like Job, he points the finger at God in the psalm, and he says that you hold my eyelids open, much like Job had said, you set me up for target practice, and look what you're doing to me. But then he changes before the psalm is through. He has questions for which he seeks answers. Those six questions are listed in verses 7 through 9. We'll come to in just a moment. But he's looking for answers to those questions. What's going on? What has God done? What's God doing now? What's coming next? And what this psalm illustrates to us is the anguish of soul is not a modern phenomenon. You may have the concept that there are times that you're going through a struggle in your life and there is discouragement in your life. Maybe there is something on the national scene. Maybe some struggle within the church, or maybe in your personal relationships, maybe in your marriage, or it may be in your own godliness. And you're struggling within, and you begin to think, that's something peculiar to our modern time, and it's something that we have to deal with, that I wish I could have lived in ancient times. And the psalmist tells us, oh no, it happened in my time too. When we were taken off into Babylon, and while the hammer had fallen upon Israel and upon Judah, we are talking about a thing that is as old as man himself, an anguish of soul. But in the psalm, he ultimately finds his comfort in God in verses 10 through 20. There is a shift, which brings us to this point. There are two parts to the psalm, verses 1 through 9 being the first, verses 10 through 20 being the second. And you cannot even do a cursory reading of the psalm without noticing a shift and a change, much like we saw in Psalm 55. This is the beauty of the psalm. There was a shift in the psalm. Verses 1 through 9 is the sigh. The song doesn't begin to verse 20. In verses 1 through 9, he focuses on trouble, but in verses 10 through 20, he focuses upon triumph. In verses 1 through 9, there is the present national disaster. Israel has fallen. But here we have the past national deliverance. He finds his comfort in God by reflecting upon the power of God in the past, which is able to help us in the present. The problem of the psalm in verses 1 through 9 is it has a limited focus, and we'll come back to that here in just a few moments. So I want to notice two things in our study. Let's spend a few moments, and we're going to quickly work through the psalm itself, seeing exactly what is the point of the psalm, and then we're going to spend some time about things that we learn from the psalm that helps us in our own struggles, our own discouragements, and our own frailties when we sometimes are struggling, much like the psalmist was here in Psalm 77. So let's focus on the psalm. If you don't have your Bible already open, I encourage you to get it and turn to Psalm 77. Psalm 77. I call Psalm 77, for lack of a better description, it seems that God has forgotten His people. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever get to the point that you're struggling and you think, maybe God's not listening. I've prayed and I've prayed and I've prayed, and the situation is not much different and it's not any better. And I've prayed about this, and I cry out unto God. I have struggles, and I have weakness of faith, and I have doubts, and I have questions, and I haven't found the answer yet. The psalmist was in that condition. He says, seems that God has forgotten His people. As I've already mentioned, two sections of the psalm, verses 1 through 9. It seems that God has forgotten His people, he says. He cries out to God. We're going to look at each one of these verses. I just want to give you a quick summary, then we'll come back and flow a little more through the psalm, a little slower. But in verses 1 through 3, he cries out unto God, he says, but I didn't find any comfort. It is not pointing a finger at God saying, there is no comfort in God, but I've cried out unto God and I haven't found the answer yet. But he does, beginning at verse 10. In verses 4 through 6, he's troubled, and he begins to think back about better times in the past. The song he used to sing that he doesn't sing anymore. Do you ever do that? Do you ever think about the past when times were better and songs you used to sing, not literally, but you sang a song because of your happiness, but you're not singing a song anymore? The psalmist says that. Beginning at verse 7 through 9, here are six questions that he has. And his question is, has God forgotten? And seemingly there's a shift by the twilight of the morning. At verse 10 through 20, he admits that his thinking was wrong. He was focusing too much on the present disaster without broadening his scope and looking at a broader picture of God. So I was wrong. So verses 13 to 20, his comfort is found in God and what God has done in the past and in His power and in His might that encourages me for the present when I think about what God did of old. So let's look in verses 1 through 3. Here he cries out unto God and he finds no comfort, he says. Let's see what he says in verses 1 through 3. He said, I cried out to God with my voice. To God with my voice. And He gave ear to me. It is, as one writer said, we are introduced to a tragedy, or we walk into the midst of a tragedy as we open the psalm to which we have not been introduced. It's almost like walking into the room and someone is sobbing and they're crying and you don't know what's causing that, but you're right in the middle of all the sobbing and crying and you're trying to figure out, what is this all about? He doesn't tell us till later. But he said, I cried out to God with my voice, and he gave ear to me, cried out. Look at verse 2. In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. In the midst of this national disaster, when Judah has fallen to Babylon and the Chaldeans have come in and they have taken over and they've taken people astray and gone off into captivity, in the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. What'd you do? I stretched out my hand in the night without ceasing. He's going to tell us later at verse 4, he tossed and turned through the night in sleepless night. So through the night, I'm stretching out my hand to the Lord without ceasing. My soul refreshed, refused to be comforted. What does it mean, my soul refused to be comforted? He is not saying God gave me the answer and therefore, but I just couldn't accept that. But what he's saying is merely crying out unto God without looking for the answer that God gives does not bring comfort at all. And he hasn't found comfort in focusing on the problem. And I toss and I turn through the night and I focus on the problem and my soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God, he said, verse 3. He said, I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. Here's his cry unto his God. And I cannot be comforted. I'm not being comforted yet. But notice it, verse 3. I remembered God. He remembered to cry out to God in the midst of his trouble. He said, I complained to my God about what the problem was. What was the problem? Much like Habakkuk had said, how could these who are more wicked than us come in and take over and punish us the way that they could? We'll say more about that question here in just a moment. But now beginning at verse 4. He is troubled and he begins to think back, as often we do in the midst of our troubles. When things turn south, things become sour in our own life, we begin to think about how things were better in the past. And so in verses 4 through 6, he's troubled and he thinks back. Look at beginning at verse 4. You hold my eyelids open. I can't sleep. I am so troubled. I am so troubled I cannot speak. I can't even talk about it. Have you ever gone through some struggle that you just can't sleep and you toss and turn through the night just thinking about the problem, and when somebody asks you what's wrong, you can't talk about it? I just can't. I am so disturbed. I don't know what to say. Then verse 5. I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. He's reflecting back to better times. Before the oppression. Before the Assyrians ever hit. Not to mention the Chaldeans. Look at verse 6. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I remember the song I used to sing, but I'm not singing it anymore. There were songs that I would sing. There were joyous times. We're not laughing. It's not fun anymore. I meditate within my heart. Now, this is interesting at verse 6. He said, I meditate within my heart, and my spirit makes diligent search. I have questions. I'm seeking and searching for answers. Do you do that? Do you have questions for which you're seeking and searching for answers? That I'm looking for the answer to my question. Why is this going on in my life? But more importantly, what are we going to do about it now? The psalmist doesn't seem to be raising the question of why has this happened to Israel? Why has this happened to Judah? That doesn't seem to be his focus. His focus is more on what do we do about it now? Has God just forgotten us? Is he going to leave us there? Are we left in Babylon to set into rot? Or is God going to remember his people? And my spirit, he says, makes diligent search. But now, here are his questions. In verses 7 to 9, his question is, has God forgotten? I cried out to God. I haven't found comfort. I'm troubled and I think back to better times before. Here's the question I'm seeking answer for. And notice in these three verses, there are two questions in each verse. And they all essentially say the same thing, but they're worded just a little bit differently. The first verse, verse 7, suggests where we get the idea that this is a national calamity that's going on. Will the Lord cast off forever somebody or some being or some nation has been cast off, and we think he's talking about Judah being taken into Babylonian captivity. And further evidence that he's talking about a national calamity is, in contrast to that, he talks about another national calamity, and that is the Egyptian captivity, a little later at the end of the psalm. And for those reasons, we think he's talking about the Babylonian captivity. But be that as it may, notice his question. Will the Lord cast off forever? You remember Jeremiah said they'd go off into captivity, be there for 70 years, and then they would return. But his question here is, forgetting that Jeremiah has said that, has the Lord cast us off, and is this casting off and this rejection forever? Or will there be a remnant? Will he be favorable no more? The Lord has shown us blessings and favors time and again. And is it that the favor of God is not going to be bestowed upon us anymore? Verse 8, has his mercy ceased forever? Are we not going to see the mercy of God anymore? Has his promises failed forevermore? Verse 9, has God forgotten to be gracious? Verse 9, has he in anger shut up his tender mercies? He pictures it. It's an interesting picture. It's as if God took his tender mercy and put them in a closet, locked the door, so that we don't have access to it anymore. Like being a child and your mother takes something away from you and locks it up in the closet and you wonder, will I ever get that again? Is God ever going to let us open the door and have that mercy again? Has God forgotten his people? And we're going to see the answers to that question in verses 10 through 12 in a moment. But notice his question. Has God forgotten his people? And here's what I learned from that. There will be times that you will ask questions that later you're going to say, I knew the answer to that question all along, because the psalmist knew it all along too. And if I might paraphrase verses 10 through 20, he says, I finally came to the conclusion I already knew the answer. When I broadened my focus and I looked at a broader picture, I remembered what God had done with Israel of old. And I knew the answer to my question all along. You may have questions today in your struggles with your faith that you're asking, what is God doing? Why is God allowing this? Has God forgotten us? Is his mercy gone forever? You may not be wording it that way, but you may be raising much of the same question. And what you may find is that when you come to the answer, you knew the answer all along. You just weren't focusing on that. And when you go and seek some help from someone and they point to a scripture that gives you the answer, you knew that answer all along. They just pointed you to what you already knew. And that's what the psalmist in essence tells us beginning at verse 10. Now, that's what basically Job had with reference to many of his questions. But here what we see beginning at verse 10. We shift from the sigh to the song, from the tragedy to the triumph, from the national disaster to the national deliverance. We've made the shift now beginning at verse 10. Two things happen here. He focuses on the hope and the comfort that's based upon the past. What he does first of all is he admits that his thinking was wrong. He admits that his thinking was wrong beginning at verse 10. He said, and I said, this is my anguish. But I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. It's as if by the dawn of the morning, he's wrestled through the night, verse 4. He's tossed and turned. His eyelids are held open. And by the time the day dawns, he's come to the realization that, you know what? I need to remember the power of God from the time past. Notice it, verse 10, he says, I will remember the years of the right hand of God. The right hand is his power. I will remember. This is my anguish. I'm wrestling with this anguish of spirit, but I need to remember the right hand of the Most High. Verse 11, I'll remember the works of the Lord. Surely I'll remember your wonders of old, he says. I will meditate on your works and talk of your deeds. Now, what I learned from verses 10 through 12 is that the answer is found in God's revelation of himself in history. He said, I came to realize that. I was wrong in my thinking. I was wrong in thinking God has forgotten his people. I was wrong in concluding, if that was my conclusion, that God has just taken his mercy and it's gone forever, because God has revealed himself. God has revealed himself and how he functions in history. And that's why we need to study things like the book of Exodus that he's going to allude to here in just a moment. God reveals the answer in history. Now, beginning at verse 13, that's especially found in God's dealing with things in the past concerning Israel.
and the Egyptian bondage.
So let's focus on verses 10 to 13. His comfort finally is found in God. So let's see what he says, beginning at verse 13. Your way, O God, is the sanctuary. What does he mean, the sanctuary? In holiness, purity. That is, God is most holy. God is an ultimate in purity. Your way, O God, is in purity and in holiness. Who is so great a God as our God? There were gods all around. There were false gods, but there is no God like our God. There is no God as strong and as great as our God. Look, what did he do? Look at verse 14. You are the God who does wonders. You have declared your strength among the people. Here's where he is saying, where I learned my answer was looking at the revelation of God through history. I went back and thought about the history of God and his dealing with his people, and God revealed his character and whether or not his mercy is gone forever and whether or not he's forgotten his people. He told me the answer to that. Where did you find it, psalmist? I found it in the revelation of God in history. Verse 15, you have the arm, you have with your arm redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. Now, this gives us a clue. What do you think of when you talk of the sons of Jacob and Joseph? I think of them being off down in Egypt. That's what he's talking about. When they were down in Egypt, it looked as if all was in despair. It looked as if all was lost. And as if they could not be delivered. You remember when Moses would go and cry, "Let my people go," God said. And Pharaoh would not let that happen. And finally, then, they march out to the Red Sea, and it looks as if they're trapped. But here's what happens, beginning at verse 16. The waters saw you. Talk about the Red Sea. He personifies the water as if it were a person. And when the waters saw God, they were afraid. In fact, the whole earth trembled at the presence of God because of his great power. He's describing the power of God. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you, and they were afraid. The depths also trembled. When the waters saw you, it parted. The water was scared to death at the presence of God. The clouds poured out water, and the sky sent out a sound, and the arrows flashed about. The voice of your thunder was in the whirlwind, and the lightnings lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Not only did the waters, but the whole earth trembled and shook at your presence, God. There is no great God. There's no God as great as our God. Verse 10. Verse 19. Your way was in the sea. Your path is in the great waters. God made a path through the sea for his people. How did the waters part? By the power of God. God hasn't forgotten his people. His tender mercy is not gone forever. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. He's talking about deliverance from Egypt. So what was his conclusion from that? His conclusion is, you see, in this Babylonian captivity, it looks like God has forgotten his people, and I'm wondering, has his mercy gone forever? Has God just forgotten about us? Does he leave us to rot out over here? And then I realized I was kind of narrowing my focus, and I began to think about the power of God. And I remembered what he did with Egypt, and that tells me God has not forgotten his people, and the same God that delivered them can deliver us as well. It's a powerful psalm. So let's talk about things that we learned from the psalm. Two sections to the psalm, remember. It seems like God has forgotten his people, but the sigh turns to a song. And the tragedy turns to triumph. And the national disaster turns to national deliverance. So let's talk about things we learn from the song. Here's number one. I learned that we ought to cry out to God and express our grief. That's found in verses 1 to 3. Go back to your song. Remember when he said, I cried out to God with my voice, to God with a voice? And he gave ear to me. The psalmist said, I cried out. I cried to God. I was in anguish of soul. This is my anguish, he said, verse 10. And he expressed his grief unto God. There's nothing wrong with shedding tears. There is nothing wrong with crying out to God and asking questions of God and searching for answers of God. In fact, the preacher said there's a time to weep, Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 4. Jesus himself wept. John 11:35. There is nothing unmanly of shedding tears. In the midst of discouragement, in the midst of pain and trials and agony, and having questions that you say, I don't know the answer to, crying out unto God.
Someone has said that there is something therapeutic about tears. It helps us to purge the heartache. The psalmist through the night begins to cry out unto God. He doesn't sleep at all that night, he says. And I learned from that, cry out to God and express your grief unto God. Are you struggling somehow in your life? Are you discouraged with something in your life? Or are there people that are discouraging you? Is there something on the national scene, something within the church, something in your home, something within your own life that's discouraging you? And you say, I'm upset about that, and it keeps me awake at night. Well, then cry out to God about that. The psalmist did. He was not wrong in doing that, nor are we. Number two, I learned from this psalm, and this is part of what makes this psalm fitting in this series of studies we're trying to do from Psalm. Sleepless nights of anguish can drive us to sober thinking. That was the point of verses 4 to 6. Notice we're taking our lessons from the sections and learning something from each section. Where he cried out unto God, I learned we ought to cry out unto God. Instead of crying out to somebody that may not know the answer to that, cry out to God. Cry out to God. But here in verses 4 to 6, the sleepless nights and anguish of spirit can drive us to sober thinking. I learned from this psalm, perhaps, that we often are so busy in our life that we fail to think and we fail to meditate. We get ourselves wrapped up in the daily routine of life. You see, there's a danger, as the psalmist said, in times of ease. Not the psalmist, but Moses said in Deuteronomy 6. You remember Deuteronomy 6, as Moses was giving his second speech of the four that are given in the book of Deuteronomy. In his second speech, he warned them about the principle that when they got into the land, and it's better than you've ever had, you'll have wells you didn't dig and vineyards you didn't plant and houses you didn't build, then beware lest you forget God. In times of ease, it's easy to back away and just forget about God and our thinking about serious and sober things. But in times of crisis and times of anguish and sleepless night, it drives us to our knees. And I want to suggest to you that grief and sorrow often promote serious thought. Isn't that what the Ecclesiastes writer was saying, that it's better to go to the house of mourning than a house of feasting? In other words, it's better to go to a funeral than to a party. Because in times of anguish, in times of grief, that drives sober thinking. And if you're struggling in your life, perhaps that's driving you to think soberly about your God and your relationship to God and what are the answers as found in the Scriptures. Number three, ask questions. But always seek the answers. Verses 7 through 9. There are six questions that are raised. Basically the same questions asked six different ways. But what is interesting, the psalm doesn't end at verse 9. He has questions for which he's seeking answers. Do you remember what he said at verse 6? He said, I meditate in my spirit, and my spirit make diligent search. I think he's making comparison with the days of old as it is now. Why is there a difference? And what do we do about it now? He's seeking answers to his questions. There is nothing wrong, nor is there any shame in having questions and doubt. You may have questions and you may have doubts. And you may be struggling with some questions in your life. There's no shame in having questions. And even having doubts at times, but there is shame in accepting the questions as the final answer. And if your question is, has God forgotten his people? If that's the final answer for you, then there is shame because you haven't found the answer in the fact that God has not forgotten his people. The psalmist went further and he found the answer by looking at God's revelation in history. And when I looked at God's revelation, I learned that God has not forgotten his people. I knew that all along, the psalmist must be saying. But my reflection helped me in that. Number four. This is important. This is part of the benefit of Psalm 77. And talking about comfort from the Psalms. The troubled soul often has a narrow focus. Let's get this point. The troubled soul often has a narrow focus. In verses 1 through 9, he's zeroing in on one national tragedy. Bad it is. Tragic it is. But he's focused on one national tragedy. Has God cast off? Verse 7. He's focusing on them being cast off in the Babylonian captivity. I cried out unto God, Verse 2, in the day of my trouble. His focus is narrow because he's focusing on one aspect, one limited period. And in verses 10 through 15, he broadens his scope and he looks at the bigger picture. If this were being viewed, that is, the tragedy, and then verses 10 through 12, through the lens of a camera, there is a focusing narrowly on something in verses 1 through 9, but then there's a wide angle that comes out in verses 10 to 15 and notices the bigger picture of things. I like what Scroggie said. He said it depicts the struggle of a soul as centered in a single night of anguish. Perhaps your discouragement is coming from a single aspect of your life. Maybe something that happens on one day, or it maybe happens in one year of your life, or it may be one aspect of your life. And that's what Scroggie suggests, that's what the psalmist is doing. Scroggie goes further to say, we find reassurance by looking behind and before into history and to heaven. What the psalmist is doing is not only looking before him, but he looks behind him. And he looks backward to the history, and that consequently causes him to look forward to heaven, and not just looking at the present. He does that in verses 10 through 15. Verses 1 to 9, he has a limited focus. He has a broader focus. He looks behind and before into history and to heaven. Scroggie goes further to say, as he lay awake, despair and hope bound within him for mastery, and before the day dawned, a great light had flooded his soul. Do you see the picture of what verses 10 to 15 is saying? It's like the psalmist is tossing and turning. He can't sleep. He can't. And if somebody asks him, why can't you sleep? I can't talk about it. I'm just terribly upset. I've got these questions I don't know the answer to. Has God forgotten His people? And before the day dawns, he's come to the conclusion as he broadens his scope and says, you know what? I knew all along God has not forgotten His people. Because I remember how He dealt with us of old. I knew what He did in Egypt. And He knew how the waters parted. The troubled soul often has a narrow focus. Number 5. Verses 16 to 18, remember, God's power is greater than the power of the world. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you and they were afraid. What's that about? Well, the psalmist has seen the power of Assyria and the power of Babylon, and they were powerful. Assyria was mighty. Sennacherib is described in the previous psalm. But in the next psalm, Psalm 77, it is the power of Nebuchadnezzar that's described, which seems to be greater than Sennacherib. It's powerful. But what the psalmist says, beginning at verse 10, there's nothing that compares to the power of God. Oh yes, Assyria is powerful. And oh yes, power of Babylon is more powerful than Assyria. But you want to top it all? You look at the power of God. Look back at verse 10. There is, he said, no God, or verse 13, who is so great a God as our God? There is no God as great as our God. Look at the waters being afraid of it. The waters parting. Sennacherib could not do that. Nebuchadnezzar couldn't do that. Remember, God's power is greater than the power of the world. Whatever it is you're afraid of, whatever it is that is troubling you, whatever it is that you're struggling with, it may be powerful, and it may be intimidating, and it may be scaring you to death, but nothing is as powerful as the power of God. That ought to be comforting to us. Here's the last thing. God has delivered His people, verses 19 to 20, and He can deliver His people. What does it mean to put your trust in God? All of these psalms that we're going to consider before we're through will drive us back to the answer, go back to God. Turn to God, as is where you find your answer. But what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, here in verses 19 to 20, it means that you put your trust and your confidence in God. God has delivered His people, and He can deliver. You see, let's go back to verse 12. This is interesting. When the psalmist came to his conclusion, and he said, remember that this is my anguish, and then I remember your right hand. I remembered, I didn't forget. I called to remembrance your mighty right hand. Remember when he said that, verse 10? Now look at verse 12. I will also meditate on all your works and talk. Thinking of the past, meditation, verse 12, helps us. What does that mean? You think about history. You think about what God has done. You think of His power and how He's dealt with various people in the Old Testament and New Testament as well, and as He dealt with nations. And that helps and encourages us. That's what the psalmist said. He said, I got to thinking about it, and that helped me. I was encouraged by that. I was sleeping in a sleepless night, and I couldn't sleep, and I got to thinking about God's deliverance of His people in Egypt and how He brought them to the Red Sea and the sea parted, and He brought them across on dry land by the hand of Moses and Aaron. I remembered all of that. That encouraged me that everything's going to be all right down here in Bethlehem. Look at verse 12. Talking of the past.
That's right.
Isn't that what he said in verse 12? I will meditate on all your work and talk of your deeds. Thinking about the past, meditation helps me. If I talk about it, it helps you. If you think about it, it helps you. If you talk about it, it helps all the rest of us. When you know somebody is discouraged, maybe telling them about God's dealing with people in the past will help them. And you would think maybe talking about deliverance from Egypt is not that encouraging. It was to the psalmist. Look at the powerful God. He does care about us. He does care about His people. The same God, here's the point of the song. The same God that delivered Egypt will deliver them from Babylon. Jeremiah said they'd come back after 70 years. They did. And the same God that brought them out of Egypt is the same God that will bring them back in 70 years. And the psalmist comes to the conclusion, you know what? That comforted me to think about. This is the same God. And you say, well, we don't go through battle. I want to tell you something. That same God will deliver you. You may not be in Assyrian captivity. You may not be in Babylonian captivity. But you may feel just as captive to your burdens and your trials and your tribulations or whatever it is that your struggles you're going through. The same God that parted the waters is the same God that brought them back from Babylon. Same God. And He's the same God that you cry out to as well. If He could deliver from Egypt, from Babylon, don't you think He can help you through your struggles and through your trials and through your tribulation? That's Psalm 77. Comforting Psalm. Seems like God has forgotten His people. I know we have studied that not too many months ago, but it fits here. So fittingly in comfort that we gain from Psalms. We're going to gain comfort from some psalms that we may not think to be so comforting, like Psalm 51. We'll talk about that in another lesson. The comfort that's gained from a psalm that talks so much about sin, but there is comfort to be gained from that. And the answer always is to turn back to the Lord. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come? Well, together we stand and sing.